Iguodala, and here it comes. He got it! The Warriors have won on a game-winning shot by Andre Iguodala!
Live from the CG Technology Studio in the entertainment capital of the world.
A Smith screen. Hoji will defend. Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
It's the T.C. Martin Show. Time to get your daily prescription from the doctor.
Gasol says, hey, pass a big ticket.
T.C. Martin.
And here comes the Birdman. Flapping his wings and soaring for a sweet flush. When you're aerodynamically designed with that hairdo, you can do those kinds of things. With that sweet mohawk.
The doctor is now in.
Unos, dos, tres.
Olé!
Olé!
Oh, yeah, it's a fun Monday, no doubt about it. T.C. Martin Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, of course, streaming live. TCMartinShow.com, LVSportsNetwork.com as well. The voice, the man, Kevin Harlan, the legendary voice on that call, talking about Chris Chapman's hairdo. Whether it was a wig, whether it was a bad cut back in the day somewhere in Malaysia, or was that the Birdman that he was talking about, whatever his name was?
Good food in Malaysia.
Yeah.
By the way, when I went there, I had a pink mohawk.
No one's talking about that. The pink mohawk. I can see that. Yes. There it is. Kevin Harlan, he was on the call yesterday as well with the Toronto Raptors getting the victory, Game 7. That was something else. Oh, we got a lot of basketball to talk about. Scott Spritzer will join us a little bit later on. When he joins us, we start handicapping Game number one tomorrow night, Golden State Warriors hosting the Portland Trail Blazers. It is the Blazers because they get by the Denver Nuggets yesterday in the Mile High City. So we're here. Eastern Conference, Western Conference Finals, ready to go. Glad to have you with us here on the program. You can feel free to jump in with us if you'd like. 876-1340. A lot to do, a lot to talk about. We got Lakers coaching. Search is finally over. We're going to dive into that. The Cleveland Cavaliers have a new head coach. It's going to surprise probably a lot of people, but when you look deep down on how they got their man, kind of makes a little bit of sense. But I know when I first heard the news this morning that John Beilein is leaving Michigan to become the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I was shaking my head, scratching my head, saying, okay, what is it? Is it that John Beilein is just kind of sick and tired of the recruiting mode? He wants to get out of the college game. Or is it all about the money, the almighty dollar going to the NBA? And then I put two and two together and go, wait a minute. Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cavaliers, right? He's a Michigan man. Michigan man.
That still doesn't make sense for John Beilein. It makes sense for Dan Gilbert.
You know how old John Beilein is?
What is he, 70?
66.
Close, all right.
And he is now will be the oldest non-interim Cleveland Cavaliers head coach, or actually head coach in the NBA, period. First time coach in the NBA, the oldest ever at that age.
I don't
first
like it. Time. I don't like it at all.
I know. It's very strange. And I like Beilein.
I like him too.
But how many times have we seen this? College coaches go to the NBA. Hasn't worked out.
Well, there's a reason why a lot of times it doesn't work out. The game's completely different. You kind of lose a lot of the edge you have in college if you're a good recruiter, and John Beilein is a good recruiter, brings in good players to Michigan. But the other thing is the Cavaliers are dreadful. They'd still be dreadful. They've been dreadful for a long time, and they would be had LeBron James not decided to go back to Cleveland.
Yeah, the big seven-footer and I were talking about this morning. We got the news, and he's asking me, he goes, why'd he make this move? And it's just what I just said to you. I go, it either has to be for the money or he's tired of that grind or whatever. And then he goes, have anything to do with that the Cavaliers owner? We start talking, well, wait a minute, yeah, he's a Michigan guy, that's it or whatever. So I said to him, I said to Bill Cartwright, I said, would you want that job? He goes, absolutely not.
No,
I absolutely not. He goes, that's just a bad job, period.
First of all, Dan Gilbert hasn't exactly proven himself to be a good owner. That's the first thing you have to look at. B, you have to look at, if you're John Beilein, why now? Like, at 66 years old, you're pretty embedded in the college game. It's not like coaching in the NBA is easier than coaching in college. In fact, I'd probably say it's a lot more difficult because you're dealing with a lot bigger ego. You're dealing with different types of players, different set of rules, essentially. I don't like it, and I don't see him being – I hope I'm wrong because I really like John Beilein. I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see this working out.
Usually when a coach walks away from college basketball that's an older coach like Beilein is, it's because they're tired of the grind. I mean, that recruiting grind can be treacherous.
Yeah, but now, is 81 games a year better?
That's where I'm going with. That's where I'm going with because when you go to the NBA – that grind is even longer, and you are starting from scratch. At least at Michigan, and people say, why doesn't Coach K or Roy Williams retire? Because they have got this thing on autopilot where they're automatically going to be getting the top kids. They've got their assistants, like in Roy Williams' case. Jimmy Black has been there forever, his longtime guy. He's got things dialed in, and Roy doesn't have to make all those visits. He can rely so much on his staff who have just decades and decades of experience. And Beilein is in that same category, going to Final Fours, perennial NCAA tournament teams that they're locked in, and we know that he's making a lot of money at Michigan.
Yeah.
So are you going to get more money being in charge of the Cleveland Cavaliers? Yeah, probably so, but why would you want to leave a job? And I don't know this for a fact, but just putting it all together, it's like he could probably retire when he wants at Michigan. It's not like he has to look over his shoulder and they're going to fire him unless there's some allegations coming down. But we always known that Beilein's been a pretty stand-up guy, and those allegations aren't coming Michigan's way.
Well, yeah, and now the other thing is, if you look at the college side of it, there's going to be a ripple effect because Michigan, at this stage of the game, it's May. It's the middle of May. Season's been over for 2 months. How are they going to go out and find a coach?
I think they have to hire within, and that was probably the plan with that. It was like, okay, a lot of these veteran coaches do this. They said, hey, my guy's been with me for 12 years, my assistant, give him the job, and we'll go smooth sailing. We saw Steve Fisher do that at San Diego State.
And it's kind of sort of worked there. I mean, Dutcher
We still don't know. We need another year
but
or so.
But it didn't work at New Mexico, right? When Steve Alford left, and he left this guy Craig Neal in charge. Craig Neal now Alford's assistant up north.
Yeah, that's true.
It didn't work there. It certainly didn't work in...
A lot of that probably has to do with Alford, too, because now we're finding out he really wasn't that good of a coach, didn't relate well to players from what we saw at UCLA.
Where Craig Neal, probably, who is a little bit more of a dynamic personality, I think, and probably a little bit of a better recruiter. But, I mean, the history of this is that it doesn't work when you go that route.
John Beilein, 278... college wins, 9 NCAA tournament appearances, 2 Final Fours, 2 Big Ten regular season championships, 2 Big Ten tournament titles, 18 all Big Ten selections. We're talking about his players there. And he's had 9 NBA draft picks. And again, he's a guy that when you think of solid basketball programs, that was John Beilein. That was John Beilein when he was at West Virginia, which led him to get the Michigan job.
And he came from what, Canisius before?
I believe so. He was back east there,
Good coach in the MAAC as well.
So when you look at the Michigan, the Cleveland Cavaliers situation, we're scratching our head here, and, a very successful college coach leaves to a dysfunctional organization. Then you got the Lakers. And what we heard over the weekend with that coaching situation. Now, remember last week, Laker fans were protesting because how long this coaching search has been going on. And we'll give you the time frame or the timetable here and exactly what transpired. So the Lakers coaching situation now finally comes to an end. Remember, they interviewed Monty Williams. You know what Monty Williams said to them and saying out in public now? He said that, and he took the job with the Phoenix Suns. He said the Phoenix Suns organization is a better fit and more stable than the Lakers.
Maybe not after their guy Josh Jackson just got arrested and he's facing felony charges Well, I don't remember. He was at a concert somewhere.
And actually, he said that before that news came out. You're right.
I'm guessing that he did not make those comments today.
But think about the narrative, though, about the Suns organization. Actually, we told the Lakers last week that the Suns organization is more stable than the Lakers.
That has to be a joke. The Phoenix Suns have been arguably the worst franchise in the NBA the last decade. I mean, they are certainly down there.
Not worse than the Kings, I'm telling you.
They're in that same realm.
Yeah, no, the Suns went to the playoffs a lot more recent than the Kings.
Which is a shame.
13 years for the Kings.
You know, because for all my childhood and even into my early adult years, the Phoenix Suns were like the model franchise in the NBA. They never won a title. But you think about the great players they had. Kevin Johnson, Sacramento mayor. Kevin Johnson, former Sacramento mayor. Saved the Kings, though, right? They were going to Seattle, weren't they?
Absolutely,
And then KJ saved them. He swooped in like Superman, saved the day. But they had Dan Majerle, Charles Barkley, Tom Chambers.
You're going way back, of course. I mean, Paul Westphal back in the day.
I mean, they had...
With great uniforms.
Cotton Fitzsimmons was the coach. I mean, they were one of the model franchises. And then Brian Colangelo leaves, or Jerry Colangelo, not Brian. And basically the whole thing collapsed. But if you're a Laker fan and you hear that, that's like a kick in the gut.
Yeah. So they go, Monty Williams turns him down. Then they have these long conversations with Tyronn Lue. And then they only offered him a 3-year deal. And they wanted to insert Jason Kidd as assistant coach. Now we go back to Jason Kidd. He was one of the first guys who was interviewed by the Lakers and Jeannie Buss and company. And they said, we like Jason Kidd, but we're really worried about those domestic abuse charges you had. We're worried about the shenanigans that you pulled back when you were in New Jersey and then went on to Milwaukee. So they like Jason Kidd as their head coach, but they were afraid about the PR hit.
I can respect that.
So can I. But they said, we want you involved. Obviously, LeBron James wants Jason Kidd involved. So they said, Ty Lue will name you the head coach, but we're going to bring Jason Kidd as the assistant. Ty Lue said, there's two problems here. Number one is, you're only giving me a 3-year deal. Give me a 5-year deal. And number two, the money's kind of low. And the other thing is, like, you're telling me that I have to have Jason Kidd? And we don't know what that relationship is like. It could be good, bad, and
different. Maybe they don't even like each other. Yeah.
But he said no. So then they come to Frank Vogel. Now, Frank Vogel, you remember, had good success in Indiana, had horrible success in Orlando. With Indiana, he was there for 6 seasons. They went to 2 Eastern Conference finals. Then his last 2 years in Orlando, rebuilding project, 29-53, 25-57, he was fired. But I'll say this about Frank Vogel. If you're going to give me a choice between all of those guys, I'm going to pick Frank Vogel because he's got 8 years experience. Because he's a no-nonsense guy, and people are saying, well, how's he going to react with LeBron James and this and that? If you go back to his history, he's going to run the show. He's going to develop talent. He has more experience. Therefore, he's not going to get run over by some of these younger guys. So people are making fun of this selection of Frank Vogel. Give him a shot, because at least he's got the most experience. And of all those guys, I'd rather have him.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
he's had more success.
The NBA title Tyronn Lue won is kind of a sham, right?
Oh, come on, yeah.
I mean, he wasn't coaching that team. LeBron was coaching that team.
And David Blatt wasn't coaching that team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that whole thing still doesn't sit right with me with David Blatt. But, and then, you know, obviously Jason Kidd, I don't think he's ever proven he can coach in the NBA. I mean, which is why I think when his name was brought up as a possible head coaching hire at UNLV, I was like, let's pump the brakes on that one.
Yeah. Well, again, UNLV kind of stayed away from that like the Lakers did, too, because he had domestic abuse charges. He had a lot of issues. Now, you go back to Jason Kidd, okay? Jason Kidd tried to pull a power play on Billy King, the GM of the Brooklyn Nets.
Billy King, not exactly a great GM.
I understand that, okay? He orchestrated his move from New Jersey to Milwaukee, if you remember that.
Yes, I remember
that. He tried to take Brooke Lopez with him. And remember this, just months and months ago, he openly campaigned for the Lakers job while Luke Walton still had the gig.
Yeah.
So I think
that's dirty.
Some of that. Yeah, it is. And I like Jason Kidd as a person, but as a coach, you know, I saw a lot of Ty Lue in Jason Kidd where, you know, he was a guy that kind of let the players do their thing or whatever. And I'm telling you, in Milwaukee, that situation was very loose. It was too loose. That's why the Bucks cut him loose.
And they rightfully so.
Yeah. So
I don't think they regret that.
Here's the problem with the Lakers. Okay. The Lakers have a who's in charge problem, as we know. All right. The Lakers want to control their coach, the entire staff, hence bringing Jason Kidd and saying, Frank Vogel, he's going to be your assistant. They're offering less money than anybody else than what these coaches have made. And when you go back and look at what Luke Walton was making, you know what Luke Walton's was per year?
I don't know.
$5 million a year. Way too much for Luke Walton.
First-time head coach, yeah.
Way too much. Frank Vogel. Do you know what Frank Vogel made? And I understand that, you know, this was like, what, 4 or 5 years ago when the Pacers were relevant and went to two Eastern Conference Finals. He was making $2 million a season.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, well, to be fair, I don't think Frank Vogel was exactly a hot commodity. Remember, Luke Walton was the hot assistant coach at somebody's going to strike the jackpot when they hire this guy.
Vogel was a longtime assistant coach as well, too.
But was he the hot assistant?
Well, probably not. Yeah. No. But he had success in developing players, and I think that was it. But the Lakers, who's in charge here? That's where the problem is. We know it's not Magic anymore.
No, he's gone.
And we don't even know how much Magic was in charge when he was there.
Yeah.
We don't know that. Rob Pelinka had the title, said on his business card, that he was running the show, right?
Well, doesn't sound like he was.
And we know he's not now. He stepped back. When people are pointing to who's making the decisions, do you know who they're pointing to? This will blow you away if you haven't heard this already.
Well,
Do you know who is actually kind of running the day-to-day operations?
It should be Genie that they're pointing the fingers at.
Right. But it is Kurt and Linda Rambis. Kurt and Linda Rambis are running the shows. They're pretty much calling the shots.
How is that even possible? Linda Rambis, I'm assuming that's his wife, not his daughter.
Right.
Yes. What role does she have in the Lakers?
And a big one, my friend.
But why? Who put Kurt Rambis in charge of anything?
If you go look at their website,
he was
look
a bad coach. Remember, he was a terrible coach.
You look at their front office page. I mean, there are so many names on there that have all these goofy titles. It's crazy.
Well, that's on Genie then.
It is.
Remember when Genie pushed Jimmy out. Remember, all the talk was, oh, well, this is going to be Jeannie's team. She was brought up to do this. She was with Phil. She gets it. Maybe she doesn't.
I don't think she does. What should lead us to believe that she actually does get it?
Because if Magic Johnson, Mr. Laker, the guy that everybody my age, around my age and younger, will look to as the Laker of Lakers, the guy bleeds purple and gold. For him to walk away from that franchise, and more so that family, after the relationship that he had with Dr. Jerry Buss, that's got to send a red flag to everybody in Los Angeles, everybody all over the world who is a Laker fan. Something stinks. And usually when it's something that stinks, it's at the head.
And the great part about those glory years with the Lakers, Jerry Buss wasn't making the calls. Genie Buss wasn't making any calls. It was Mitch Kupchak.
Yeah.
Mitch Kupchak organized. He was the creator, the architect of that roster in those glory years. And I remember talking to Mitch Kupchak here in Vegas at the Summer League after he was let go.
He got a raw deal.
He was bitter. He was real bitter, and you can't blame him. He really thought he was going to retire as a Laker executive.
I mean, he was essentially the Brian Cashman of the Lakers.
But the stuff that we heard Magic say in that press conference a month and a half or so ago, that's kind of what Mitch Kupchak was saying 2 years ago. It's like, wow, okay, there is some dysfunction
in this franchise. Because the Lakers, look, we can love or hate the Lakers. I'm not a Laker fan. I have no vested interest. But the NBA is better when the Lakers are good. Just like baseball is better when the Yankees are good. It gives you intrigue. It gives you something to root against. It gives you that good versus evil aspect. I don't view the Warriors as that team. There's nobody in the NBA who could step in and be, outside of maybe the Celtics, who could step in and be that franchise where you're like, I despise them or I love them. Right? Laker fans, I grew up in New Jersey. I knew hundreds of people. Maybe not hundreds, exaggeration. Lots of people who were Laker fans. I loved watching Magic Johnson.
Yeah. And the Warriors, maybe we'll get to that with another championship and after that. But again, people look at that different. You know, the Lakers weren't much different. I mean, they would go ahead and bring in free agents just like the Warriors did. But again, you had just decades upon decades. Remember, the Warriors winning the title in 75, and then they were pretty much irrelevant in the 80s and the 90s and definitely in the early 2000s. And it's 40 years between championships. So, the kids, like you said, 20s, 30s, even early 40s, they don't remember the history there in Oakland/San Francisco, the Bay Area. So there's a big disconnect there. But you're right. The Lakers, the Celtics, all that stuff. I was talking to Bill Laimbeer kind of about this today. We're talking about, I said, hey, Bill, are you watching much of the NBA playoffs? He goes, a little bit, not too much. We're talking about the Warriors, this and that. And he goes, and we're talking about the new teams. And like kind of what you're saying, it's like, it doesn't just have that. Toronto, no one's going to get excited about that. The Bucks are a nice story, but the casual fan is going to say, Milwaukee Bucks, are you kidding me? No. I mean, that doesn't resonate with anybody, right? It's Milwaukee. It's a small market. And they haven't been relevant like the Warriors 20, 30 years.
Yeah, they haven't been relevant since Lou Alcindor.
Right? All right. Then you go to Portland.
Who haven't been relevant since Bill Walton.
There you go. Exactly.
Drexler,
yeah. Right.
Kevin Duckworth.
You don't have to put Duckworth's name in there,
Buck
okay?
Williams.
You don't have to put, his
Terry Porter.
Terry Porter, Stevens Point, there you go.
Is Terry Porter still coaching University of Portland, by the way?
Yes,
he's still there.
Still there.
Poor guy.
So you got Portland, then we got the Warriors, but when you think of the four teams that are here right now, it just doesn't say anything like, wow, this is must-see television. And Cleveland Cavaliers, well, they're out of it. But then again, so there's no LeBron, there's no Cleveland, there's no Boston, there's no Lakers. Houston would maybe crawl in there a little bit.
Is there any chance that Giannis could turn into the new LeBron? Like the guy
there's no doubt he could, yeah.
But,
sure.
But Milwaukee, they have to get past the Raptors. But could you imagine those people in New York in the NBA offices sitting there biting their pencils saying, dear NBA basketball gods, please don't let the Warriors lose. Could you imagine a Warriors-Raptors NBA Finals? It'd be the lowest rated NBA Finals ever.
We've seen teams like that squeeze in there before that have gone to the Finals. But I'll say this. We're talking about teams. We're talking about brands. And we don't have that this year. But look what we do have. We got superstars. You've got Kevin Durant. You got Steph Curry. You've got Giannis. You've got Kawhi Leonard, and then you've got Damian Lillard. So
as much as we like him,
but still,
he doesn't quite register on.
Maybe not with everybody. You're right at that point. But when we look at who are the best guards in the game, Damian Lillard is a top five type, top six. I'll say top five guard. There's
and
no
how
question.
Good was CJ McCollum yesterday? Right,
exactly. And then we're not even throwing in Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and this and that, who have plenty of championships and all-star appearances. But when you look at these, you still got star power, especially with Kawhi Leonard. And there's that intrigue that a lot of these guys are free agents after this year.
Yeah, it's true.
So interesting. It's gonna be interesting to see how this portrays. I'm a fan. I'm a big NBA fan, and I love the series. We had two fantastic Game 7s yesterday. But you're right. Marquee names, they weren't there, but we had two very good Game 7s yesterday.
And my team suffered heartbreak.
Your Phillies, your Philadelphia 76ers, man, we're going to get to them too. Scott Spritzer is going to join us, and we'll replay what took place yesterday in that Game 7, the buzzer beater by Kawhi Leonard. And we'll preview tomorrow night's game between the Warriors and the Trailblazers. Both series as well, too. We got that and a whole lot more coming your way. TC Martin Show on Fox. All right. We got ourselves a great NBA playoff situation here. We got a couple good conference finals. Like we said, may not be a whole bunch of, what do I say here? I'm all mixed up. I'm trying to say what we were just talking about. You just don't have a lot of brand recognition, possibly. But we've got superstars. We got superstars with Toronto and Milwaukee and the Warriors taking on the Portland Trailblazers. And our good friend Scott Spritzer is going to join us. We're going to break down the NBA playoffs, the Western Conference and Eastern Conference Finals. What's going on, Scott?
Hey, how you doing, TC?
I'm okay. Okay, so I want to know what your reaction was after we heard this yesterday.
You got to be aware of the inbounder here if you're Philly.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons.
Is this the dagger?
That is Kevin Harlan with the call yesterday as Kawhi Leonard's jumper from the corner as he sailed into his own bench, squatting down, watching it bounce not once, not twice, three times a lady. No, four times and in, making the Toronto Raptors a winner. What was your take on that, Scott?
Well, my take on it was from a betting angle, of course, and I lost, so I really didn't care. having said that, I am a big fan of Kawhi Leonard. If I was picking number one in a draft and I could take any player in the NBA, I would choose Kawhi Leonard. So being a fan of his from that standpoint, I thought it was pretty cool to see him defy, you know, logic, mathematics, and all that kind of good stuff and shoot a shot with an 18.5-foot arc at its apex, rattle around four times off the rim and fall through for the series winner. And I think the better team won also as far as the series was concerned, because ever since they made a trade with the Clippers to bring in yet another shooter, another starter, talking about the Sixers, I just felt right from the get-go, and I was doing podcasts back then, that they still didn't have a bench, and eventually it was going to get exploited, and it did in this particular series a little bit. I mean, obviously, he misses that shot, and, you know, all of a sudden you could have a different scenario. But I do think overall the better team won, and being a big Kawhi Leonard fan, I'm glad it was him that sank it, but I wish they could have won by more than six. That would have made me feel a little bit better.
Money line, Scott. There you go. Money line.
I'm not laying that big money line on a six-point spread, man.
but at the end of the day, it's a winner. If you didn't have the money line, they're only holding your money for a couple hours. That's the way I look at it, but I hear you, man. The way Philadelphia's played on the road, too, I can't blame you for laying it. But you know,
plus Game 7 home team, exactly. Which was interesting because Game 7 home teams almost went 0-2 straight up yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, and I know. And I got burned on that one. I went with the money line with both of those games yesterday, so I got burned on the Denver game, you know, losing. And I'm kicking myself because I like Portland, and I really love the guard play. I've always liked Lillard and McCollum, and I'm going like, okay, they could probably keep this game close. But then, I don't know, I just started thinking home court, too much Denver, and that came back to bite me. And the Joker, Jokic, he was nowhere to be found yesterday.
Well, I didn't play that game yesterday. I played Game 6, and we won Game 6, and we've had a really nice run for about 2 months now in the NBA. But I decided to leave that one alone, and it was right where I made it, which was 4-ish, right around there as far as Denver being the home court favorite. And you're right, you know, it was kind of one of those things that at the start of the series, I thought in order to beat the Denver Nuggets, you let Nikola Jokic get his, and you make sure the so-called role players don't beat you. You don't give up, you know, 25 points to, you know, a guy averaging 14 or 15 points per game. And so that was the situation that I thought they would be in Game 7. Again, let Jokic get his, make sure nobody else beats you. And the thing is that Jokic just didn't come through with his type of game or performance that you would hope for out of one of the top players in the NBA in a home game, in a Game 7, and that was their downfall, it turned out to be. I mean, you know, there was points of the game yesterday where Denver looked like they were going to run away with it, but you know, when it came down to the clutch minutes, they were not the better team.
I'm a firm believer, Scott, that after that whatever quadruple overtime game where Jokic was just dragging,
right,
he was not the same in any game thereafter, especially Game 6 and 7. His legs looked shot, the footwork looked lazy, and you know, when you needed a bucket, they continually tried to go to him, and he did not have the answer.
Well, and that's the thing. I'll be a little bit nicer to him and say the footwork wasn't lazy, it was weary.
There you go.
So I'll be a little bit kinder. Right. Listen, their coach, Malone, he came out after that four overtime game, and he said post-game, the post-game presser, I can't do that to him. Guess what? You did it to him, and you probably used up his gas tank or most of it for the rest of the series. He was absolutely right. I can't do that to him, but guess what? You already did it. And I do. I believe that is, you know, I don't think he ever recovered. I think he was probably going 85 to 90% after that particular game. And because of it, they end up losing a Game 7 at home. But listen, as far as I was concerned in both, even though it was close and it could have gone the other way, I thought the better team in both series ended up being the victors in both those series.
All right, Scott Spryce for joining us. Doc Sports, let's talk about tomorrow night's game, the opener in the Western Conference Finals, Golden State hosting Portland. This one, Scott, Golden State, a 8-point choice in this one. I think we have to handicap the Kevin Durant factor here as well, too. Where his calf is, we know he's not going to play in game one. He's doubtful for game number two, but the Warriors are going to take a wait-and-see approach with this situation here. Are you figuring that, okay, the Warriors are going to come out pretty focused at home here, and Portland maybe a little fatigued and tired, and the number of eight is pretty accurate, or which way are you leaning here?
Let me throw this out there, and I'll start this way. If I look at a playoff series, and it's a single-digit line, and I'm going to play the underdog, I have to think in my mind that the single-digit underdog can win the game outright if I'm going to play on that team. So it doesn't mean I always play the favorite. It just means that, you know, I'm either playing the underdog because I think they can win the game outright, or I'm not playing the game at all, potentially. It doesn't mean I'm always playing the favorite. As far as this particular game is concerned, I'll throw one number out there at you to start. Steve Kerr has lost one game one as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors in the postseason as their head coach. One game one. So I'm kind of thinking, I'm not so sure that the Portland Trailblazers can win this game outright, and that's one of my prerequisites for jumping on a single-digit underdog. The other thing is the adjustment to the number. If Kevin Durant's playing, add another 3 points to that point spread right now, and yet people are still betting on the Portland Trailblazers, moving that from 8 down to 7.5 in some books, just like they did when Durant was missing for the game in Houston, you know, when they were a 7-point favorite Houston, an over-adjustment on the line, yet it still didn't come down. So you have to factor that in. How about throwing in the fact that Rodney Hood looks like he's probably not going to play? You know, we're talking about Durant. Hood's not going to play in all likelihood for Portland. He's got the bruised bone in his knee that he suffered in their last game. That's their second shooting guard on the team. You know, you got McCollum. You've got, obviously, Rodney Hood after that. So they're not going to be 100% healthy for this one also. You factor all that in, and it makes it a little bit tough, TC, to back the Portland Trailblazers in game one. And when you break it down as far as the series is concerned, you know, everybody's talking about, boy, I think Portland can catch him. You know, Durant's banged up. He's going to miss a game or two, maybe more. And I'm like, all right, great. But he was missing for a game and a half against Houston. And if you break things down, look at true shooting percentage. Portland's decent. They're ninth in the NBA. Guess who is third? The Houston Rockets. You know, you look at effective field goal percentage. Portland's not horrible. They're 13th, so middle of the pack. Houston was fourth in the league this year in effective field goal percentage. So you look down the line at all these key numbers and stats, and Portland's not as good as Houston, and we just saw Golden State dispatch Houston in six games without Kevin Durant for a game and a half. I think that series price minus 500, I think it's too low. I really do. I think Golden State ought to be minus 750, minus 800 if it was me making the number.
And they probably would be close to 700 if Kevin Durant was definitely playing in all of these games. But I always like to go against a team, especially with virtually no rest, and this is the Portland situation, where they're coming off such a huge emotional victory and a road victory at that. I think it's a great spot for Golden State. Not crazy about laying, you know, nearly eight, but this could be warranted, in my opinion here. And we look at this. This is definitely guard play, and we know guard play is huge in college basketball when we get to the tournament. It's that same way in the NBA playoffs as well. And Portland, that is their only strength, Scott. And I say only strength because there's nobody that scares me down low. Cantor doesn't score me down low or scare me if I'm in the opposition. Anybody down low. You mentioned Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood, even though he comes off the bench, he is their leading 3-point field goal percentage guy. And
right,
like you said, more than likely he's not going to play. And what's weird about this, people want to talk about Lillard and McCollum. They are a fantastic backcourt duo. But I can't remember the last time that both of these guys were on at the same time. Usually when one guy's on, the other guy's off. And that's exactly what happened yesterday.
And it's funny that I'm glad you brought that up, because earlier today I heard analysis on somebody who thinks that Portland has a legit shot to win this series, not just game one, but the series. And more power to him, man. Maybe he'll be right. And I'm not saying this to knock somebody who has that analysis. You know, everybody's got their opinions and come up with good analysis for the most part to back those opinions. And they were talking about Lillard, McCollum, compliment each other. What a great backcourt. They know what each guy has to do. If one guy's down, he doesn't mind if the other guy you know, takes over and is the star of the game. But as you mentioned, they're not always on the floor at the same time, for one thing, and there's a pretty decent backcourt on the other team. You know, and if you had to say which backcourt do you want, I'm going with that backcourt of the Golden State Warriors. I'm going to take Klay Thompson. I'm going to take Steph Curry over McCollum and Lillard. So I'm glad you brought that up at the point also that, you know, these guys aren't on the floor at the same time for good chunks of the game. So, yeah, I mean, again, the problem with Portland for me, as far as the length of the series is concerned or their chance to win the series, besides what I've already mentioned, is what you said. They don't have the offensive presence in or around the paint to make Golden State have to play an honest brand of defense. And by the way, I saw a great stat earlier today on ESPN, I believe it was, and this is really diving into stuff and good stuff, and they were talking about the top players, you know, in the NBA as far as their points per possession and isolation plays. You know who's number one in the league? Rodney Hood. He's better than Steph Curry in that, and they might be missing him. So factor all that in, and I just don't see Portland making a lot of... I think it's a six-game series tops, TC.
I'm with you. Scott Spritzer joined us. Real quick, before we leave this series, Scott, game number one, you got any idea about a total play here at all? Because when you're looking at, you know, the injuries that are factoring in here, too, in so much guard-oriented play here, is it better just to stay away from a total, or do you have a feeling one way or another under over here in game one?
I lean towards the over right now. If you look at the three, and you can't make a big deal about this because they're regular season games, but if you look at the three regular season meetings, you had totals of 235.5, 227, and 227, three of the final four regular season meetings. And you saw, you know, 236, 220, and 219 points being scored. The total in this one is up to about 219 right now, but you're talking in one case 16.5 points lower than it was the last time these two teams hooked up during the course of the regular season. And you get why, because you do have a couple of injuries here and there. It is the playoffs, and you always think the defensive intensity is going to pick up in the postseason, the perception. So I think the total's probably where it should be at 219. I did see one book that opened, you know, 218 with a little bit of juice on the under. I didn't agree with that, but now it's getting up closer to 220. I'm looking at one particular book in Las Vegas that has 219.5. A lean towards the over, TC, but I'm going to be on the side and not the total in all likelihood.
All right, not that this means anything, but these teams split four decisions against each other. Each won two games during the course of the regular season, and we know that it really doesn't mean too much because the Warriors are a totally different team in the postseason than they are in the regular season. Let's look at Toronto going to Milwaukee, and in this series, the Bucks won three out of four contests this year, actually covered in three of those four games. And when you look at Milwaukee during the course of these playoffs, Scott, they've covered 4-5 at home. And the Bucks, what are they known for? More double-digit victories than any other team this season. This line should probably be maybe 7 or 8, but it's not. And I like the home team here too.
Well, for game one, you know, I haven't decided yet. I mean, I got another day to do it, and I know they say, you know, if you like the favorite, you could have got 6 somewhere if you jumped in, and I know that you're probably not going to get that as a better of Milwaukee because about 70% of the tickets thus far in the couple of books that I use for this information is on the Milwaukee Bucks. They're a heavy public side right now as we speak for game one, but I think as far as the series is concerned, I think Toronto's bench and depth can expose where Milwaukee is hurting a little bit. And I'm splitting hairs a little bit when I say they're hurting, but the truth is that Toronto's got the depth that Milwaukee doesn't. I also think they have, again, the player who can offset the Greek Freak when you talk about Kawhi Leonard, who to me, again, is my most valuable player in all of the NBA because he can clamp down and really shut down the offensive studs of the other team while he can go out and grab 10 rebounds and score 40 points and dish out 7 or 8 assists when needed. So to me, he's the most valuable player in the NBA as far as I'm concerned and how I rate individual players. So I think they got slightly ahead of the Greek Freak, the best player on the floor, but we're not going to try to make a living off of that difference. But overall, I do think it's the fact that I do believe they'll be able to exploit Milwaukee's lack of depth compared to what Toronto has. They took on a Boston team, Milwaukee did, that was dysfunctional. Kyrie Irving, you know, he's looking to get out of Beantown. And you've got the great coach, obviously, in Coach Bud when you talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think gives them a slight advantage over Toronto in that particular category. But, TC, I'm looking at that price of, you know, minus 280, minus 290, come back on Toronto around plus 240, plus 250, And I think Toronto is the team you take in the series at that price. I don't think there's any value on the Milwaukee Bucks at that series price. So because of their depth, I think Toronto's able to capture this series.
All right, so I'm going to take the opposite side. In all due respect, as you know how much respect I have for you here, I really love Milwaukee's depth, and that's actually one of their calling cards and has been during the course of the season. And here's what my problem is with Toronto, Scott, and this is what we saw again yesterday. When Kawhi is going good, I mean, he is it. And when Toronto gets in these close games, and we've seen it time and time again, especially in the playoffs, that the rest of this team just shuts down. What was the stat yesterday, and you probably have it, didn't Kawhi score like 16 or 18 straight points where no one else scored for Toronto? Because when I look at the rest of these guys, they are standing around, the pace slows to a crawl when they get in these close games, and literally it looks like they panic. I mean, Gasol wants nothing to do. They don't go into the post at all. It is Kawhi or nothing, and that's what scares me about this team. Now, on the flip side of that, the Bucks, they've never been here before, so we don't know what we're going to get. All we can do is judge by, you know, they've been blasting everybody during the course of the regular season and during the playoffs, and I love Kawhi Leonard. I'm with you with that, but I don't think I can trust anybody but Kawhi.
Same thing I think I could say for the Greek Freak. Well, 27 points, 11 boards, nobody else is close. Chris Middleton, 18, 19 a game, 5-6 rebounds a game. You know what I mean? It's like, I think we could say the same thing about both teams. And I don't agree that Milwaukee's depth is great. I think it's good. And like I said, I want to split hairs, so we'll have a difference of opinion there. But I think that Toronto's depth is better than Milwaukee's depth, you know, as far as their bench is concerned. But when I look at Milwaukee, if the Greek Freak doesn't have a big series, they're not going to win the series. They won't. If he doesn't score 27 points per game and grab 10 rebounds per game, they're done. And so I think you could say both. I think you could say that about both teams.
Oh, yeah.
Just by,
no doubt.
In all due respect, my opinion, I think it goes both ways in this series.
But I don't think that we can actually say that either Giannis or Kawhi are going to have any of those letdown games, because we haven't seen any of them, especially with Giannis. I mean, when was the last time we've seen this guy, you know, score anything under 20 or 25? It just seems like he's going to get his points. Kawhi, in my opinion, he can score, you know, more from long range. He can maybe do more things, but there's no one better in the paint for his size, I think, than Giannis.
Yeah, neither one I'm thinking is going to have an off series.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would rather have Siakam as my number two scorer and player than Middleton. I mean, Pascal Siakam's 21 a game, 7-8 rebounds per game. He'll dish out probably 3 assists per game or thereabouts on his season average, or playoff average, I should say. And so to me, you know, and I look at it that, and really when you look at the guard play, overall, I'm going to give, in the playoffs, in the postseason, overall the guard play slightly more props to Milwaukee's backcourt, top two or three guards, than to Toronto's, because after Kyle Lowry, there is a drop-off. You know, Danny Green, guys like that, Fred VanVleet, those guys aren't going to match, as far as the numbers are concerned, what Milwaukee has in the backcourt. But as far as the top two, you know, Leonard and the Greek Freak, let's call it a wash, and then it's Siakam and Middleton next.
Yeah.
And you know, and also it's going to come down to how often are we going to see Leonard and you know, match up defensively when Milwaukee has the ball on the Freak. And can Siakam handle the Freak? Because Siakam's a power forward like the Freak is also. So that's going to be an interesting couple of matchups.
All right. Maybe a friendly wagers on this one. I think we're on opposite sides for the series. What do you think?
What the heck? We got to do a food wager, don't we?
Of course. Absolutely. It's tradition, right? Come on.
I'm all for it, man. You know, when it comes to food. Wait. I was going to say, you know, when it comes to food, I'll take the crown. But no, I have to bow. I have to bow to the king when it comes to the food issue. So, but yeah, that sounds fun, man. Let's do it. And listen, let me just finish it this way. If Milwaukee wins this series, am I shocked? Hell no.
Right.
But I do think Toronto at plus 250 for me, and the way I handicap it is the way I have to go in this one.
Okay, so there you go. And we can just skew the food that way as well, Scott. So instead of maybe, you know, one of us, if I win, maybe I get the $80 dinner, and if you win, you get the $100 dinner.
Holy cow, I think that's good. I want to throw this at you. I hope you don't mind. And I just want to throw this out there at you, because I think you'll like this. You know, a good friend of mine, Preston Johnson, I saw earlier today that he likes Toronto plus 1.5 games at minus $1.18, which means they can lose a 7-game series and you still collect. You know, if they lose 4-2, right, you're screwed. You know? Right. But at plus 1.5 games, if it does go to a seventh game, you win with Toronto on that bet, whether they win the seventh game or not.
Good stuff, man. All right, my friend. We will talk to you more during the course of these playoffs. Great stuff. Make sure you follow Scott on Twitter as well as at DocsSports.com as well. All right, brother. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, TC.
There it is, Scott Spritzer. There you go. Good friend of the show. Always there for us, whether it's football, basketball, year-round. Scott Spritzer, Doc Sports. All right, we come back. We'll wrap things up, and we got some Major League Baseball. Kind of a light night tonight. And, again, we'll tell you about some other NBA news when we come back. Get on over to one of the fantastic CG Technology Sportsbooks. Get the mobile app. NBA playoff time, Major League Baseball, new and improved app with great in-game wagering options. Go over and visit the Palms, the Silverton, the Venetian Plaza, the Hard Rock, the Tropicana, and the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. It's betting made easy, the CG Technology mobile app. All right, very light night in Major League Baseball, so we'll just kind of chill. But we do have a hockey game tonight. Game number 2. What happened to the Blues? They decided not to show up in game 1 on Saturday. Horrendous.
Yeah, it happens. Game 1 in San Jose, a little bit of a layoff. I mean, it's not surprising that St. Louis was outplayed in that one.
Man.
It was close in the third period.
And who does Martin Jones think he is now all of a sudden? Patrick Roy? Come on!
Well, Martin Jones has been good against most of the teams in the league, just not against this team.
Isn't that crazy, though? I still got the visions of Martin Jones and the Golden Knights just ringing it up against him, especially during the regular season. But anyway... Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. I know there's a popular theory about the under. There's a great trend. The Blues coming off a loss, especially when they give up that many goals. They hit the under big time in the next game. We'll see what happens. But with either goaltender, I can't get behind it, man. Can't do it. We'll see what happens. Tomorrow, we'll talk a little NBA Summer League, Terrible Tuesday. We got all that happening. JT the Brick coming up next, confirmed. There you go. So hang tight for that. The world-famous Bobby Machado. He's in concert every day right here at 4 o'clock. For Chapman, TC, so long. If you miss any part of the show, go to the website, tcmartinshow.com, lvsportsnetwork.com as well. We will catch you tomorrow at 3.